Today, the Halloween trick or treat, a market update for the 30th of October 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And this, frankly, is a monster post because there's so much going on and totally applicable to Halloween night. Well, the interesting times continued this week with US markets strong to the end of October on strong results, despite some wobbles from big tech and despite more weak economic news. And here in Australia, the lack of moves by the RBA on Friday implies that its yield curve control, at least in the short term, is now over. And it's worth noting that they own 64% of the April 2024 bond. That's probably a record. In fact, the RBA might just drop or amend its yield target for as early as Tuesday's meeting, but I expect they will wait until later. Market participants have been closely attuned to the ability of companies to manoeuvre through labour shortages, rising price pressures and clogs in the supply chain. And a solid earnings season in the US has helped investors overlook a mixed macroeconomic picture, with the Federal Reserve that is poised to begin to trim its massive bond purchases soon. The central bank's next policy announcement is on November the 3rd, so watch out for that. Although a generally positive earnings season has helped underpin global shares, inflation risks from supply chain bottlenecks and costlier raw materials have increased expectations of interest rate hikes. If we're going on the right path but at a slower pace, which means the policy support persists for longer, then that's still positive for markets, State Street's head of North American multi-asset strategy, Lee Ferengi, told Bloomberg. Meanwhile, G20 joint finance and health ministers will meet later in the day with a leaders' summit to take place over the weekend. US stocks shook off early declines and closed out the last trading day of the month with modest gains on Friday, as a rise in Microsoft helped offset declines in Amazon and Apple after disappointing quarterly earnings from the online retailer and iPhone maker. Microsoft shares closed at a record high of $331.62 and ended the session with a market capitalization of $2.49 trillion, passing Apple's market cap of roughly $2.48 trillion. Apple lost 1.81% after it warned the impact of supply chain disruptions will be even worse during the current holiday sales quarter, while Amazon declined 2.15% as it forecast downbeat holiday quarter sales amid labor shortages. They are hiring big, though, to try and address this, putting some upward pressure on wages. Facebook jumped 2% as its rebranding announcement a day earlier was well received on Wall Street following its underwhelming quarterly report earlier in the week. Facebook said on Thursday it would change its name to the Meta as part of its strategic move to build out and capitalize on the metaverse, where real-world experiences are replicated in the online world, often using virtual reality headsets. It looks like investors already have a bit of a sugar high as Halloween approaches, said Alan Phillips, Managing Director of Portfolio Strategy at EP Wealth Advisors. Most of us are prepared for a bumpy ride today following yesterday's announcements from Apple and Amazon, but fortunately, today's positive reports from companies like Exxon and Chevron help change the narrative. The takeaway from today is the resilience to the overall index despite 10% of market cap in two companies disappointing, and yet the market is flat. It's the resilience of the marketplace. It suggests to me the trend is still intact, said David Joy, chief market strategist at Emerise Financial in Boston. Maybe the numbers were a surprise to the analyst community, but not the reason for the disappointment, so there is still a general view that this is not business loss, but business just postponed, and the trend in the economy and in the market continues to be on the upside. So as a result of all that, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.25% to 35,819. The S&P 500 gained 0.19% to 4,605, and the Nasdaq added 0.33% to 15,498. So while it's been a wobbly week, in fact at one stage the S&P 500 fell as much as 6.5% earlier on Friday, the index was up 1.3% for the week, its fourth straight weekly climb, marking its longest weekly streak of gains since April. For the month, the S&P rose 6.9%, and that's the biggest monthly rise since November 2020. The Dow rose 0.4% for the week, while the Nasdaq gained 2.7%, also marking four straight weekly gains for each. The Dow climbed 5.8% for October, its best monthly performance since March, while the Nasdaq jumped 7.3% for its biggest monthly percentage gain since November 2020. Apple had risen about 2.5%, while Amazon had gained 1.6% in Thursday's session, helping to send the S&P 500 and Nasdaq to closing record highs. And in fact, with 279 companies in the S&P 500 having reported results through to Friday, 82.1% have topped earnings expectations. The current year-over-year earnings growth rate for the third quarter is, wait for it, 39.2%. The volatility index was down 1.63% to 1626. And US crude prices settled higher on Friday, with crude oil for delivery in December up 0.66% to $83.36 a barrel, turning positive after an early decline, supported by expectations that the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, Russia, and their allies known as OPEC Plus, would maintain production cuts. While more Iranian supply may come online, it looks like OPEC Plus is unlikely to raise production, which is giving strength to the market today, said John Kilduff, partner at Again Capital in New York. Prices have been pressurized since Wednesday by a report that US crude stocks rose by 4.3 million barrels in the last week. Iran has said talks on reviving the international deal on its nuclear program will restart by the end of November, bringing it a step closer to boosting oil exports. In fact, crude has surged in 2021 as economies recovered from the COVID-19 pandemic, but prices are on track to fall this week, with Brent facing its first weekly decline in about 2 months. US energy firms added oil and natural gas rigs for the 15th month in a row in October, as those oil prices soared to fresh seven-year highs, spurred by rising oil prices to its highest since April 2020. Exxon and Chevron are looking to add drilling rigs to the Permian Shale Basin after sharply cutting crews and output in the region last year, the companies both said on Friday. Chevron said it will add two drilling rigs and two completion crews this quarter. And on Thursday, Algeria said a crude output increase by OPEC Plus in December should not exceed 400,000 barrels per day because of market uncertainties and risks. The alliance, which is gradually unwinding last year's record output cuts, meets on November the 4th. British and European gas prices continue to fall on Friday after Russian President Vladimir Putin said Russia could start pumping gas into European storage. Gold futures for December delivery was down 1.03% on Friday to 1,784. And for the week, it was down almost 1%, its sharpest loss in 6 weeks. In fact, gold's fate of being stuck for now in the 1,700 territory seems as real as ever, as the Federal Reserve heads for its monthly meeting next Tuesday, while the noise of US stimulus tapering is likely to get louder. Gold is not finding any love with European sovereign funds, or for that matter, any of the major institutions, said Philip Strebel, precious metal strategist with Chicago's Blue Line Futures. It's like the moment it hits $1,800, people hit the sell button. That's what happened today. And the cascade of sell stop orders below just acted like falling pins. This is just the end of a bad week for gold that isn't going to get any better next week with a Fed meeting and jobs numbers looming. I'm looking at a retest of the $1,750 level and possibly much lower. The dollar's spike to a two-week high also weighed immensely on gold on Friday's trades, as the yellow metal suffered at the advance of its biggest rival. The dollar surged after data on Friday showed the Fed's annual inflation gauge hitting a 30-year high in September, keeping the pressure on the central bank's policymakers, as well as the Biden administration in reining in surging costs. U.S. consumer sentiment also remains at risk after soaring inflation, although Americans seem resigned to higher costs from economic upheavals caused by the pandemic, according to the University of Michigan surveys. That's the latest iteration of its closely watched consumer survey. While gold is supposed to be a hedge against inflation, it has barely lived up to that billing this year, as expectations that the Fed will have to raise rates at some point has weighed on the metal. Elsewhere, inflation pressures and the prospect of interest rate hikes whipsawed bond markets. The yield on the US 10-year Treasury fell to 1.55% after earlier gains. Markets are grappling with a number of cross-currents. Generally, positive core performance has helped to underpin global equities, but inflation risks from supply chain snarls and costlier raw materials are boosting expectations for rate hikes and dimming the economic outlook. Almost any data series you look at, be it the bond market, be it inflation, GDP, the labour market, anything, is still showing these signs of fibrillation, and that's going to take some time to sort out, said Scott Clemens, chief investment strategist at Brown Brothers Harriman. The latest GDP data in the US showed growth slowed more than expected in the third quarter, hampered by supply chains and a surge in COVID-19 cases, and a separate report showed that weekly jobless claims fell to a pandemic low, and personal spending slowed in line with analyst estimates in September. Data showed US consumers' spending increased solidly in September, while inflation pressures are broadening. The data indicated the jury is still out on whether the Fed's transitory view on inflation will hold true, but of course that rather depends on your definition of transitory. How long is transitory? Who knows? Now in Europe, bonds extended a retreat after data on Eurozone economic growth and inflation topped analyst estimates, reinforcing a growing conviction that interest rate increases are on the horizon after only a mild pushback from the leader of the European Central Bank. For years, the ECB would kill for prices to turn higher and reach, if not surpass, its inflation target of 2%. And let's not even talk about economic growth. Ever since the global financial crisis, it seems as if the old continent is stuck in a slow, miserable debt trap, whose eventual outcome is the economic disaster that is Japan. But things have changed fast, and according to the latest data, the Eurozone economy continued to boom over the summer as activity rebounded after the coronavirus lockdowns. However, a problem has emerged. Inflation has blown past expectations, leaving the European Central Bank with a growing policy headache. First, the good news, growth soared as consumers return to stores and venues, but many businesses have been unable to keep up with demand, putting further pressure on prices, already driven higher by the rising cost of commodities. The economy of the 19 countries sharing the euro expanded by a bigger than forecast 2.2% in the third quarter. That's the fastest pace in a year, and puts it on course to reach its pre-crisis size before the end of the year. That data was marginally stronger than consensus expectations of 2.1%, with stronger prints than expected in France and Italy, but weaker increases in Germany and especially Spain. Unfortunately, in its commentary on the GDP print, Goldman wrote that looking ahead, we expect the pace of sequential growth to slow in the fourth quarter across the euro area to around 1%, given less catch-up potential, softening survey data, near-term supply-side constraints, and the drag from the energy crisis and lower foreign demand. The bigger problem is that while the growth burst is certainly transitory, the roaring inflation may not be, because between the surging growth and soaring oil and gas prices, Eurozone headline inflation went to 4.1% this month. That's more than twice the European Central Bank's target and matched the all-time high for the data series that was launched back in 1997. While inflation was mostly driven by high energy prices and tax hikes, growing price pressures from supply bottlenecks were also visible in rising prices for services and industrial goods, That's a worry for the ECB, which is slowly accepting that price growth may be more durable than once thought. Core inflation, which excludes volatile food and energy costs yet, which are just as critical to Europe's households, especially with winter approaching for a continent gripped by historic energy crisis, rose 2.1%, and that's the highest in two decades. Unfortunately for Europe, this economic golden quarter is unlikely to last, as the economy is hitting speed bumps, as supply shortages, a scarcity of labour, and the resurgence of coronavirus infections thwarts output. Growth will be much slower in the final quarter, as supply chain disruption, slowing global demand, and some labour shortages hamper production, Andrew Kenningham at Capital Economics said. But a bigger question is what happens to inflation? According to Reuters, inflation is also likely to ease, although there is growing uncertainty over how far and how fast. Indicators suggest the decline will be slower than the central bank once thought, raising the risk that high prices, even if temporary, could become entrenched in wages and corporate pricing structures. ECB President Christine Lagarde did acknowledge on Thursday that supply disruption would persist, but she said inflation will fade back to below the 2% target over the medium term, so no policy response is required for now. And here an even bigger problem has emerged as markets increasingly doubt Lagarde. Rates markets are now pricing in a 10 basis point hike by July 2022, another one by October. And a week ago, markets were pricing in just one hike within 12 months. And the change in expectations came even as Lagarde tried to push back those bets. In fact, the three-month Euribor December 2022 futures have plunged, hinting at a surge in rate hike odds by the end of next year. This may well be a self-inflicted wound by the ECB head. After all, during yesterday's dovish ECB presentation, which Goldman described as pushing back against inflation and pricing, things suddenly reversed. It's not for me to say if markets are getting ahead of themselves. A comment that sent the euro to its strongest in a month. According to commentators, this was no longer a rigid attempt to keep the euro and yields in check. They say that this was reminiscent of comments by Federal Reserve officials in late May in their initial attempt to carefully communicate the bank's intent to taper. FX strategists such as Bloomberg's Vasilis Kremes were stumped by Lagarde's odd phrasing. Is it a game-changing moment through a carefully selected choice of words or a communication error that dovish leading officials will look to talk back in coming days? I would tend to fear towards the latter regard, had Lagarde not explicitly said yesterday that she expects PEPP to finish at the end of March. According to officials familiar with the matter, policymakers were cautious about an outright pushback on rate hikes backfiring, given the high uncertainty around the outlook. I'll buy that for now, but does it also mean that the Governing Council isn't so sure about their transitory narrative after all, or that markets have more of a carte blanche to bet their own way? That said, not everyone is convinced that the ECB is losing control. Headline inflation will likely recede from its current rate of 4.1% to close to 1.5% again in late 2022, as special factors fade, one economist said. We thus look for the ECB to start raising rates in late 2023 rather than in 2022. And yet, adding to inflation concerns, an ECB survey of companies released on Friday showed over 30% of respondents expected supply constraints and higher input costs to last for another year or so. A slightly lower percentage predicted difficulties would last 6 to 12 months. Firms also reported a scarcity of applicants for jobs as people change professions, country or lifestyle, which is likely to result in wage increases. Of course, other central banks around the world are already tightening policy or plan to do so by removing extraordinary stimulus put in place to combat the pandemic. In just the past week, short-term rates in Canada and Australia soared higher as the central banks reversed on their previous defence of low rates and either pulled forward the date of the first rate hike, in the case of Canada, or effectively ended yield curve control in the case of Australia. So while the ECB is still refusing to concede that it's behind the curve on inflation, The market has already made up its mind and is pricing in higher rates by the end of 2022. And with the ECB losing control of the front end, a clash between central banker models and the brutal reality of markets is coming, and it could have calamitous consequences for European asset prices. The euro gained decently following the ECB's decision, as President Lagarde noted that inflation would stay elevated longer than previously thought, despite Lagarde trying to push back expectations over a rate increase next year. Market participants stayed adamant that high inflation could indeed lead to earlier hikes. On Friday, the German DAX was down 0.05% to 15,688, and the FTSE in London was down 0.16% to 7,273. Now, over in Asia, in fact in China, some China Evergrande Group bondholders received an overdue interest payment shortly before the expiry of a grace period, buying more time for the debt-stricken property developer as it tries to raise cash through asset sales. Certain holders of the 9.5% dollar note maturing in 2024 received notification that they had been paid on Thursday. Evergrande skipped an interest payment due the 29th of September, starting the clock on a 30-day grace period before investors could declare a default. It's the second time this month that the debt-stricken property developer avoided default. The latest payment to international bondholders comes amid a sell-off in Chinese junk bonds. It was placed on Thursday by Casa Group Holdings Limited, one of the property sector's largest issuer of dollar debt. Evergrande dollar bonds are still priced at high default likelihood. That still left them trading at discounts of more than 75% from their face value, with the 2023 bond yielding, wait for it, 190%. The property developer, which staved off a default last week by securing $83.5 million for the last minute payment of interest on a bond, needed to make a $47.5 million coupon payment to bondholders by Friday. A failure to pay by the Friday deadline would have triggered cross defaults on all of the company's $19 billion worth of bonds in international capital markets in what would have been the world's second largest emerging market corporate debt default. The source of the funds used to make the interest payment is unknown, although Bloomberg News reported earlier this week that Chinese authorities had urged Evergrande's founder to pay the developer's debt out of his personal wealth. Shares of Evergrande were down 3.73% to 232, and it still has nearly $338 million in other offshore coupon payments coming due in November and December. Evergrande has tried its best to solve liquidity problems, but it's a little bit difficult to get enough capital to pay all the debt, said Cliff Sahal, chief strategist at China Construction Bank International in Hong Kong. I think there will be some negotiations between Evergrande and its lenders, so some sort of haircut is still possible. The market still needs some time to digest and to price this in. Even as Evergrande secures funds to make payments, other Chinese developers whose fortunes have been hit by market concerns over Evergrande's debt crisis have slid into formal default. Fantasia Holdings Group, Sinac Holdings, China Property Group, and Modern Land China have all defaulted on dollar debt obligations this month. In a meeting with developers this week, China's National Development and Reform Commission and the State Administration for Foreign Exchange told developers facing large offshore debt maturities to evaluate repayment risk and report difficulties. And the NDRC also implored developers to meet offshore debt obligations and to maintain their reputations and market order. Selective defaults in the offshore market are emphatically not acceptable for the authorities, and the NDRC clarification this week should reassure offshore investors that they will be treated fairly alongside onshore investors, DBS strategist Weilang Chang said in a client note. And coal futures extended a dramatic decline as China's government said there was further room for prices to fall, ratcheting up interventions in the market aimed at easing an energy crisis. Production costs for coal miners are much lower than current spot prices for the fuel, meaning rates can continue to fall, the National Development and Reform Commission, China's top economic planning body, said on Friday in its official WeChat account. The agency cited initial results from a survey of key companies in all production regions. The most active thermal coal contract on the Zhenhu Commodity Exchange fell 7.5% on Friday to 973 yuan or $152 a tonne, the lowest close since September the 10th. Futures have slumped 47% since hitting a record high on October the 19th. China's coal mining stocks face a rough outlook as the country plans price curbs. China's authorities are pressing coal producers to both raise output and lower prices to help address tight fuel supply that's prompted widespread shortages, seen power restricted for some heavy industrial users, and left many utilities generating electricity at a loss. The economic planning body is considering capping the price at which miners can sell thermal coal to alleviate pressure on power producers. And China is also urging miners to deliver about an additional 100 million tonnes of the fuel by the end of the year to help meet winter demand. The Shanghai Index was up 0.82% to 3,547, while the Hong Kong Hang Seng was down 0.7% to 25,377. And the Nikkei 225 in Japan was up 0.25% to 28,892. Japan's economy likely shrank over the summer as a COVID surge and supply bottlenecks slammed an already feeble recovery, according to estimates by several economists just a couple of days before the nation goes to the poll. Several analysts have now estimated gross domestic product shrank for a second time this year, adding to signs of a delayed recovery compared to other major economies. Another setback for the economy could put pressure on the winner of Sunday's election to compile a bigger stimulus package to support growth. The ruling coalition of recently installed Prime Minister Fumio Kishida is expected to hold on to its majority. Kishida has pledged to draw up measures worth tens of trillions of yen. The economy likely contracted by 1.1% on an annual basis in the 3 months to September, said another analyst. And at BNP Paribas, they see a fall of 1.5%. The revised estimates follow dismal quarterly production data released earlier on Friday, showing the biggest drop in output outside of the pandemic since the aftermath of the 2011 tsunami, as global supply chain snags force major automakers such as Toyota to pare back production. The output data came just a day after the Bank of Japan lowered its growth forecast for the year ending March, citing supply constraints. Now, in Australia, Australian shares suffered their worst day in a month on Friday, ending a streak of weekly gains as the sell-off in bonds struck blue chips sensitive to rising yields and as lower commodity prices hit energy and mining companies. The ASX 200 dropped 1.4% to 7,323, ending the week 1.2% lower to notch its first weekly loss in a month. The broader S&P All Ordinaries benchmark fell 1.3% to 7,639. The declines were initially concentrated in sectors that act as proxies for the bond market, including real estate and utilities, but spread to all corners of the share market in an afternoon of broad-based selling. Real estate shares fared the worst, tumbling 2.5% for their worst day since March, followed by communication services, which dropped 1.9%, and financials, which were down 1.8%. Companies that offer durable returns like property, infrastructure, utilities, insurers were among the victims of the selling pressures on Friday. These companies can insulate portfolios from losses in a down market as investors push into safe stocks and government bonds, sending yields higher, but are susceptible to the reverse. Unibail Rodamco Westfield tumbled 6.2% to $4.82, the biggest decline among blue chips, while Mervac Group, another property company, fell 3.7% to 282 and was among Friday's 10 worst performers. Among financials, Suncorp fell 2.5% to 1172 and QBE dropped 2.2% to 1183, while NAB was 2.5% down to 2871. That was the worst among the big four banks. CBA slipped 2.18% to 104.68 and ANZ was down 0.46% to 2814. After its full-year results. Tech stocks which are sensitive to higher inflation, fell 1.7% on Friday. Higher inflation weakens the value of the future earnings that anchor the lofty valuations that many tech groups achieve relative to the market. Materials companies, which include the big miners, fell 1%, following a 6% decline in the price of iron ore overnight. And energy shares dropped 1.8% after growing pressures on the price of oil pushed West Texas Intermediate, the US oil benchmark, lower. Healthcare, which was a lone holdout for much of the day, finally succumbed in the late afternoon to trade 0.1% lower by the close, despite positive news from ResMed, one of the biggest companies in the sector. The sleep apnea device maker reported a 20% uptick in sales to $1.2 billion for the December quarter, and its shares gained 4.2% on Friday to $37.17. GUD Holdings led the market with a 6.9% advance to $12.20, ahead of the 5.6% boost to Reece shares following news on Thursday that the company's sales rose 13% to $1.8 billion in the September quarter. Leading market economists brought forward their forecasts for when the Reserve Bank will raise rates after this week's stronger-than-expected inflation print showed prices are recovering faster than the central bank anticipated. Traders were convinced that the Reserve Bank of Australia would step in to save the day on Thursday and on Friday, like they did last Friday, to defend their yield targeting short-term dated bonds. However, echoing yesterday's move, the RBA once again defied market expectations and just let it rip, sending the 2024 bond yield soaring from 40 basis points to almost 70 basis points. Bloomberg reported that some economists have suggested the RBA could drop or amend its yield target for the April 24 bond as early as Tuesday's meeting. The central bank already owns 64% of the notes. That will lead to further speculation that Governor Lowe will entertain the idea of an earlier rate hike, but it will reprice the entire short end of the Australian yield curve, which will soon pancake in preparation for the coming inversion. The central bank shocked traders when it decided against buying any of its target bond, telegraphing that its yield curve control, at least on the short end, is now, for all intents and purposes, over. The yield on the three-year government bond expiring in April 24 skyrocketed to five times the RBA's desired level this week as financial markets bring forward estimates on interest rate increases driven by rising consumer prices across the economy. So, of course, the economists came out of the woodwork in response. AMP Capital was the first to move on Wednesday, with chief economist Shane Oliver penciling in a small increase to the cash rate of 0.1% to 0.25% in November 2022, followed by a quarter percentage point increase in December 2022. CBA agreed that the Reserve Bank will deliver a 15 basis point rate in November next year and follow that with a quarter percentage point increase in December. The bank had previously forecast the RBA to begin normalising the cash rate in May 2023. And NAB brought forward its first rate rise projection to the middle of 2023, but predicted an aggressive series of increases taking the cash rate to 1.75% to 2% by the end of 2024. Unlike AMP and CBA, it sees the first increase being 40 basis points. And NAB also expects the RBA's quantitative easing program to end by next February and call time on its yield curve control as the central bank pivots to outcomes-based forward guidance. NZ noticed that sustainable inflation above 2% will force the RBA to shift its forward guidance to paving the way for a rate increase in the second half of 2023. A change in the forward guidance removes the rationale for the yield target, it argued. And Westpac held firm in its call that the RBA's first rate rise will be in March 2023. The bank is anticipating a 15 basis point increase that will likely occur in February 2023. And finally, in crypto land, well, they were quite strong once again. Not surprising at the moment, given everything else that's going on. But a new report issued by the intelligence division of the US-based exchange Kraken suggests that mining operators and long-time holders are actively contributing to Bitcoin's rally this month. The report, called Shocktober, states that mining companies and Bearmouth holders are creating a supply shock in the market that's fueled the short-term rally during this month. according to a metric called the one-year revive supply, which reflects the movements of coins from long-term Bitcoin holders, these investors are not taking profits from this rally. The metric fell to 2,293.5 Bitcoin, the lowest level since August. Also another metric, BTC HODL waves, which divides Bitcoin sales by types of holders, found out that early investors of old coins, Bitcoin that's more than 6 months or of no movement, rose by 10.9%. This implies that long-term investors didn't sell their Bitcoins during September's sell-off. The mining situation is also relevant for Kraken. According to their investigations, there are two distinct patterns occurring. Big miners like Riot, Marathon, Bitfarms, Argo and Hut 8 have continued to stack Bitcoin even in unfavorable market moments. This is evidenced by another metric, the OHOP supply, that makes reference to the addresses that receive the mining subsidy direct from Coinbase transactions. This metric has risen almost 50% since September, with the big mining firms now located mostly in America, holding more than 20,400 Bitcoin that are unlikely to be sold into the market anytime soon. This contributes to the mentioned supply shock. However, small participants in the market have taken profits. The one-hop supply, an indicator that attempts to track the movements of small miners and contributors that get paid as part of a mining pool, shows that those miners have unloaded some of their profits. But if this trend suffers a reversal, it could cause an even bigger supply shock that would lead the market to even higher prices towards the end of this year. So from a crypto perspective, you've got to understand some of these dynamics, but of course it's also a matter of if anything's reverse. Who knows? It's very hard to know what the true value of a Bitcoin is. And more broadly, you can see from this rather long litany of issues that there are many uncertainties. Inflation, deflation, well, we're probably more on the inflationary side, although I still worry that the growth rates are easing back again. And in fact, it may well be that deflation comes back into vogue much more quickly than many people think. I actually think the inflation story is now rather oversold. But I also think that central banks around the world are going to react to the inflationary pressures. And we are going to see rates rising quite a lot quicker than many people thought. And of course, rate rises translate into higher mortgage costs, and hopefully a little bit more for savers. But that would be enough to really give the property market in Australia, for example, a significant shakeout. So as I update my scenarios next Tuesday for my live show, it'll be interesting to see how all of this translates into future property price expectations. You can join us at 8 p.m. Sydney time on Tuesday to hear the latest on mortgage stress, and also the latest on our scenarios. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.